Support for SyncBook Radio comes from listeners like you. Consider helping to make independent productions like SyncBook Radio possible by becoming a donor. Your generous gift helps to keep these unique voices broadcasting and exploring. Details about how you can help can be found at thesyncbook.com/donate. Thanks.
Shut your eyes and you'll burst into flame. When this kind of fire starts, it is very hard to put out. The tender boughs of innocence burn first, and the wind rises, and then all goodness is in jeopardy. Fire is the devil hiding like a coward in the smoke.
Hello and good morning. I'm Douglas Bowles, and you're listening to 42 Minutes, a production of SyncBook Radio and thesyncbook.com. A weekly conversation with the interesting artists and thinkers of our day. You can find us online at 42minutes.com and you can reach us by sending a message to mail at 42minutes.com. You can also follow our tweets at Sync42 and at SyncBook. Before we begin today's 138th broadcast on this 27th day of May, we'd like to say thank you. Because of your generous help, the Olympia Sync Summit Indiegogo crowdsource funding campaign was a success. With 51 donors, we raised $5,001. Amazing. Thank you so much. Keep your eyes peeled for more information and details regarding the Oli Sync Summit at thesyncbook.com/Oli2014. Hey, maybe we should do some housekeeping now. How are you today, Will?
Good.
Just good?
I'm doing pretty good. All right.
What's new and interesting with you?
Oh, man. I don't know.
Well, are you working on anything?
Yeah, I'm working on quite a bit of stuff. Actually, I just finished up doing my first commission piece of sync video. Wasn't supposed to be a sync video, but I made it into one. Actually, Andras Jones paid me to make a demo reel to put up on his IMDb and to give to his agent. So he needed a new updated, and I got a little bit of crazy on it and thought of it as synchronistic headshot. So it has no narration. It's only 3 minutes long. It's only mixed of clips that have Andras Jones in it, but there is like a little bit of a sync flow.
Cool.
Yeah. That it was meant not like make people claw their eyes out, but it was meant to get some sort of point across.
Sure. Are you working on anything for Olympia?
That's the next task. Yes, yes, indeed. But I don't want to give away too much information about what I'm going to do. I know that Alan mentioned Viggo Mortensen, and I've been watching a lot of Viggo Mortensen movies lately.
Cool.
But we have to see where the cards fall. I mean, the Indiegogo just got wrapped up, and so there's a lot of scheduling involved now.
Well, maybe we should give listeners a rundown of what to expect then in the nearest future. The show is going to take the whole month of August off, but we'll definitely provide interesting content of some kind during that time. I'm thinking we'll have to definitely provide some audio from the Sync Summit, but also, you know, we'll just have something so that if you subscribe to the podcast, something's going to download each week, and it'll be fun, so I think you probably should all subscribe to the podcast so you just automatically get it. Next week we have Miss Sally Ford from Portland, and later that evening we're really excited to speak with the World Speed Project and the Keanu Code at the same time, which is just incredible. We have a couple of great book shows coming up later with Lydia Netzer and Elena Graydon. Patrick Harper, we're going to be speaking to him in the middle of next month, and I've been reading a ton for that show, and I'm really excited, actually.
I cannot find Daemonic Reality for the life of me, man. I've gone to all kinds of used bookstores. I've gone to the different libraries around town. And the funny thing is every time somebody looks it up, they're like, holy crap, this book is expensive.
I was able to do an interlibrary loan to get that one. But
so you do have it. Dang.
No, we had to return it. I'm actually really enjoying the Secret of the Philosopher's Fire. I think it's his latest book, and when we're talking to him, I think they're re-releasing it as an ebook or something. So that'll be the one we'll be pimping, I think. But I'm also reading his most recent novel, which is interesting too. But also, you know, to get back into the flow, earlier, before we do the Patrick Harper show, we're going to speak more in depth with Ezra Sanzerbell about Astro Music, and I think we're going to have the help of Andras Jones on that show. So basically what I'm saying is it's a fun summer. Please stay tuned, and thank you again for playing with us the other night on the live Pledge Drive show and for donating. You guys are the best. It's inspiring. You know, the day after, I was just walking around on a cloud. It was so great. But anyway, what do we have today, Mr. William Morgan?
Oh, yes. Let's see. Let me look this up real quick. Well, today we will be spending 42 minutes with the Marge King. John Philip Sousa is an American composer and conductor known primarily for American military and patriotic marches. Among his best-known marches, of course, are the Liberty Bell, the Thunder, the Washington Post, Semper Fidelis, and the Stars and Stripes Forever. And his mastery of composition of marches led to the nickname the March King. While on tour in Australia, he developed the sousaphone, a large brass instrument similar to the tuba. And
I think that's the wrong wiki page, Will.
What do you mean?
What does this have to do with the flying circus? Welcome, John Sousa. How are you today?
Hey, not bad. How you doing?
I'm doing great. It's great to finally have you. You've been a part of everything we've done for so long. It's good to finally talk to you.
Yeah, it's good, fun stuff.
Great. And you were there the other night when we did that live show.
Yes, I was.
What was that like?
It was a little bit like a commercial, but I've heard all the guys that are on there quite a bit, so it was fine. It was interesting. It was good to hear you guys be all excited.
Yeah, it was pretty authentic silliness, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was very authentic.
I definitely want to thank you for donating that beautiful woodworking piece to the campaign.
That was fun, yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, you definitely did your part. So thank you so much.
No problem.
All right. So you are a woodworker.
Yep, for a long time.
And as a woodworker, that gives you the space to listen to things as you're woodworking.
Yes.
Do you find that when sometimes you get too into the work, you end up tuning out what you're listening to, or is it pretty much muscle memory and you don't, you know, you can do the two things at once?
Sort of switch back, you know, when I can sort of keep the listening in the background. Before I got my computer, I used to do that with TV a lot. I used to listen to TV, which is kind of cool because then you never get to watch commercials. You just listen to them, so you never really know what they're about. Sometimes, not always, but yeah.
And from like a sync point of view, does that enter into your process as an artist?
Well, I don't know, because what I'm interested in, I listen to, and what I'm interested in, I carve. So I guess they just reflect each other in a way.
Okay, so like last week, we're speaking with Jake Kotza, and, you know, his process is he sees a kernel of something that's interesting, and he doesn't necessarily consciously know what he's going to find, and he explores. Do you have an image of what you're trying to accomplish from the piece of wood, or do you just kind of move into the wood and see what you
find? Is it improv? Or...
Well, I'll tell you, one of the first Okay, when I was in high school, my grade 10 art teacher gave me a hunk of soapstone that he had laying around his own house. And what I did with that was I carried it around for a week at school and at home until it told me what it wanted to be. So basically, that was like me looking at it, me looking at the grain, me looking around myself in my life and what's going on, and then deciding eventually what it's going to be, just like by letting it happen, you know what I mean? Instead of forcing an image. Sometimes, you know, you have a piece of wood and you have a specific project. So you have to go out and you have to choose it to be able to be used for that specific project, you know?
Yeah.
It's pretty much the same thing, you know?
So someone wants a piece and then you have to find that piece in the piece of wood somewhere.
Yeah, it's sort of like, what was his name? Was it Leonardo da Vinci? He said, like, you know, there's the thing is in the middle and I'm just taking away the excess. It's pretty true.
And what are you using to make these things?
I use all hand tools. I use no power tools. Sometimes I'll use a hand drill, like a cordless drill. But pretty much it's all hand saws and chisels, files, axes.
And this is your day job? Is that
no,
right?
Not really. I don't make enough money to do that. I have little jobs that I do to get by on and blah blah blah. A long time ago I got a whole bunch of money and I'm sort of living off that for now.
That's cool.
It's very cool. But yeah.
You're like Batman and shit.
More like Iron Man. No.
Well, so now your website, canadiandipsticks.blogspot.ca, you have, are these, each of these pieces already sold as you work on them? How does that work?
I just make stuff. You know what I mean? I make things that I hope people will need. Sometimes, you know, people do, and I get them to.
Yeah,
them.
I can, yeah.
But so, like, do you have a store somewhere to sell these? I don't.
No, I'm a loser like that. No, I don't. I'm not. What's the word? I don't promote myself well enough.
Ah.
Yeah.
So then, a lot of these pieces, are they?
Most of them that are on there are out and about. Let's say people have them.
Okay.
But
do you have like a local connection where you do a piece and it ends up in some shop?
No, I don't do that.
Really? Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Your pieces are so beautiful. I would think that you could have both a local market and, you know, an online market for this.
I've never sold anything online. I've given lots of stuff away, which is totally cool, but I've never sold anything online. And once, but I knew the person already. And we just used online to get together.
Hmm. What are you working on right now?
Right now, I just started a piece. It's okay. All my wood that I get is all found wood. It's all there's a couple of wood shops in the neighborhood, and I'll go through their garbage. Or if they're open, I'll knock on their door, and I'll say, "Hey, what you got for me, boys?" So right now I have an off-cut piece of maple, and I'm going to make a bowl. And around the outside, I'm going to do like some Celtic design. You know, like, some knotwork and whatnot on the outside edge.
Uh-huh.
Now, you also donated something to the Olympia Sink Summit as well, though, right? For the Indiegogo campaign?
The Caduceus?
Yeah.
Yeah, that thing is beautiful.
Yeah, that was actually part of a larger piece. On my blog, it's called Rising. It's, I had a face that I did a while back. I modeled it on an Olmec carving, one of those big stone carvings that you find in Mexico. And it has and behind it is a cymbal, right? Like from a drum kit.
Yeah.
So that's like the sun behind the old winged creature.
And so the Caduceus part with the Blue Lotus, is that all one piece, or is that?
Like... That's all one piece. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. It's all from a piece of pine that I got with no knots in it. It was a very nice piece. And I didn't paint it. I got my sister, Eduarda. She's a fine artist. She was the one that painted it for me.
And what about the face? Is that also one piece?
That's so on that carving, the rising, there's three pieces. It's the face. Sorry, four pieces. The face, the wings are separate,
uh-huh.
And the symbol on the back.
Yeah. What is, I mean, one of the words that I hear you use is burl. What is burl?
Burl is like, you know how when you're walking by a tree,
uh-huh.
And there's like a lump sticking out of it, kind of almost like there's a bowl sticking out of it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So yeah, like a knot.
No, a knot is like inside the tree from where a branch comes out. A burl is usually on the outside of the tree. It's where like there was a disease or something in the wood, and the wood has created a scar over it. So you tend to get like a lot of bark, but on the inside you tend to get wood that has very you know, it's all like messed up grain. It goes on top of itself, and so that when you cut it up, it has a lot of figuring in it. Right?
A lot of character.
A lot of character. It also tends to be very hard. So they use them for pipes and things like that. Yeah.
Cool. Have you ever worked in Hawthorne?
Hawthorne? No, I have not.
'Cause I had a tree that we ended up, it was rotted at the base, so we ended up taking it down last fall, and then I laid it out in my back porch. It looks like a corpse, because we ended up chopping it into sections. Not super long sections, but sections nonetheless, and it's a really, really hard wood.
Yeah, Hawthorne is pretty hard. Yeah, so you get that wood that you got from that tree.
Yeah.
You stick it in a barn for about a year and a half, 2 years, and then it's ready to go. Has to be seasoned first, so that it dries.
Okay, so I've had it exposed to the air. You think I should move it into the garage? I don't have a barn.
Yeah, and you also have to paint the ends. You paint the ends so that the moisture doesn't get released as quickly, because that's where most of the moisture is going to come out, is the ends. And when you don't paint the ends, it tends to crack.
It definitely cracked.
Yeah. As soon as you chop it down, you should paint the ends. But in the middle of the wood, there might be something left, unless it's cracked all the way along. That happens too. But yeah, usually you get it off the ground and put it so it dries somewhere where it can dry as slowly as possible. Outside is good for at first, and then you move it into the inside.
Huh.
Well, sheltered anyways.
Well, maybe I'll have to go back there one of these days and take a bunch of pictures, and we'll see if there's anything there that you could use.
You'd have to ship it to me, though.
Yeah, and that's probably...
That's expensive, because wood's heavy.
It is heavy.
Yeah.
Well, the thing I keep thinking about as we're speaking about wood is I'm thinking about flow.
Yep.
And what wood does is it compresses time into space. So what you have is an amount of time compressed into a small object. And so what you're seeing is the flow of the universe through this object.
Yep. And it what's the word? It tells you what's going on in that time as it's going through space, right? You know how like you can read the different widths of the bar of the tree rings and stuff.
Yeah. Well, even as you speak about the burl, you know, you're it's the life of the tree.
You're part of the life, yeah.
Yeah. And so it's a chaotic part,
yeah.
Obviously.
It's kind of where the little eddy in the current of time. A significant spot or place that started, and it's sort of, it's not really a cancer, but it's a separate growth from the tree, kind of, you know, it's not normal.
And then are there instances where you do want a nice uniform grain to work?
Oh yeah, for sure. Like that, on the snakes,
uh-huh.
The caduceus, that was very uniform. That way it makes it, see, you want it to be like all crazy and everything when you want beauty to the wood, but it makes it very hard to carve, right? So like when I'm carving that snake, every time I change direction, I have to change direction with my chisel. You know, every time the wood changes direction, I have to change direction of my chiseling, otherwise, or my cutting, otherwise I'll be lifting the grain, right? Uh-huh. And with a burl or something that has crazier grain in it, sorry about the technical terms, by the way, a burl that has, you know, more intense grain, it's harder to carve because you never know what direction you're always changing direction of your chisel, right? When you do it long enough, like that's one good thing about doing it for a long time is you don't think about it so much anymore, so you don't force it, you know, like, because if you keep on going in one spot while the grain is changing, it'll lift and you might put a big hole in your piece.
How many times have you been into something and then ruined it?
Never, man.
Oh, awesome.
I only say that because there's no such thing as mistakes, only creative opportunities.
Okay, so like, yeah, you do something and that just leads you a different direction.
Yeah, if you mess something up, then you got to fix it, right?
Right.
There's no such thing as mistakes. You can't make a mistake if nobody notices. That's an old carpenter line.
What kind of training do you have to do this? How did you get into this stuff?
Life. You know, my older brother Joe, when I was a little boy, one of my first memories is of my brother Joe holding up a little pine horse that he carved, and he was showing it to my dad. And I was like, oh yeah, man, I want to do that, man. So I knew where he got that piece of wood. It was just down the block from my house at a wood shop. He got it from the garbage. So I went to the garbage there and I got a piece of wood there too. And I never looked back.
But you don't have any outside of your own 10,000 hours, you don't have any training.
No. Well, I was a carpenter, like in an industrial shop for 17 years. And as far as art training goes, all I have is like grade 10, 11, high school art. Training, geez. We used to, when I was a kid, when I was, I guess, between the ages of like 5 and 12, there was this place by my house, it was called the Adventure Playground. And me and my older brothers, you know, some of the kids were like 14, and my best buddy Lumpy, we used to go down there like almost every day, and they would give us saws and hammers and stuff, and we would just make clubhouses down there, like tiny houses like you see on the internet,
uh-huh.
Just like tiny houses we used to build them. Some of them were like log houses. It was awesome. And, you know, after that, there was a lot of stonework that I used to do too, mostly soapstone.
It's really soft, is that right?
Yeah, it's pretty soft. You can scratch it with your nail, right?
Uh-huh.
Like you could literally use a butter knife to do a rough carving, no problem. Not quite soap, but a good butter knife though.
Yeah.
I want to switch gears a little bit here, because I remember the first time that I was introduced to John was on Always Record.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember this, Doug?
Sure. Episode number 40.
Right. And do you remember how that went down, like what they talked about?
Yeah, I think they're talking about a number of things. Just maybe John's own sync web for himself, and then what that connected to in his immediate world.
I feel like I'm throwing you curveballs.
Are you talking about refrigerators, my man?
No, but I just remembered the whole refrigerator thing. I was actually talking about Michaela J.
Oh yeah.
It was kind of weird that I wasn't completely honest, Doug, when you asked me what I had been working on, because I've actually been working on a project with John for a while, since I heard that Always Record.
Yeah.
And he talked about an actress that he actually had, is a friend of.
You've been holding out on us, Will? You're working on the Michaela J. video?
Have we even talked about the Michaela J. thing online? I don't think I've ever said anything about it on the radio. So, I don't know. I think it's kind of... We should start introducing the project, I guess, to the listeners, what we've got planned.
What do you have planned, Will?
Well, I think we're going to do a Michaela video, yes. I got interested in what John was talking about and started investigating in Michaela.
And she's an actress also from Canada who's done a number of film work and TV.
Right.
And documentaries.
Yeah.
She's the voice of the corporation.
Right.
That is so sinky, just to say that she's the voice of the corporation.
But, I mean, she's done so much other stuff, too. She's also a musician. She's also, like, a successful model. She also does a lot of art installation or artwork.
Well, that's cool. I look forward to this. I mean, so that's always been one of those sink dreams, is to find someone who has a body of work to analyze, to sync, analyze, to create the art out of that sync analysis, and then present it to the person who was the star of the body of work, which is what you did with Andras Jones, which was what Jake did with Radong Chong. And, this would be another iteration of that, which is, it's always so exciting because the person might not necessarily be aware of their own sync fingerprint, their archetype.
Yeah, this is like an interesting project, I mean, because we can actually have a little contact. There was a lot of contact between me and Andras, of course, but there's we have John here to work as kind of like my spy. So there's a lot of, if we're curious about certain things and what she thinks about them, it kind of helps direct which way you're going to go with certain things, because you're really trying to tailor it to what would make sense in her personal experience.
Do you have any thoughts about time frame on this, Will? When can we expect a new video?
Interestingly enough, I was going to talk to you about it later today, because I'm thinking that we should be able to have something done right before or right after the Oli Sync Summit. I think we should try to do it as close to that as possible. So I don't know. I was going to talk to you to see what we could. I mean, we can get in contact with Michaela J. I think that it's important to show her the videos, and I think it's also important for her to come visit us on the show.
Definitely, yeah. That would be a lot of fun to talk about the work with the person who's the star of the video, but not necessarily a conscious, intentional star. That's the exciting part.
She's working on a documentary about aliens right now, just so you know.
Oh, yeah. What? I think I saw that. Are you two both in Toronto, John?
Yeah.
And I know the West really well, even Western Canada in some respects, but the East is just this mystery to me. Is Toronto, does it have a New York flavor? Or is it its own little animal up there?
New York. I've been to New York once. New York isn't really like Toronto because New York is like going to a canyon. We have a little canyon in Toronto. You know what I mean? With all the tall buildings.
Uh-huh.
Like, you look down the road and it's like, holy cow, Toronto's a lot more. Have you ever been to, Chicago?
No.
No, it's kind of a little bit more like Chicago. It's a big city, you know, we got the biggest dick in the world here.
Is that the...
The mayor. No, I mean CN Tower.
Right.
The CN Tower, yeah.
It now, I'm looking at a picture of it. What is this thing?
The CN Tower?
Yeah.
It's an antenna. It's a radio antenna. But it also has a rotating restaurant in it.
And so it's similar to the Space Needle, kind of, but it's...
Yeah, same shape and stuff. It used to be the tallest freestanding structure in the whole wide world.
Huh.
I used to live close enough to it that if it fell over in the right direction, it would hit my house. Almost. yeah, Toronto's a big, big city. You can do anything here. You can buy anything here. It has a really good music scene.
Yeah.
Marchiba was just here the other night. Bob the Third is going to be here in August.
Yeah. That's your world. How did you get to know Michaela J?
Woodworking. When I was working at a place called McWood Studios, the industrial shop that I used to work at, we used to work on like the Genies, the Junos, and the Geminis, which are like your Oscars.
You're right.
You know what I mean?
And you were also, because you're a carpenter, you did some set design too?
I didn't do the design, no. But, well, one thing about my carpentry in there was I was always kind of the artful carpenter. We used to say that we built plywood boxes, and that's all we used to do, but any shape you wanted, right?
Uh-huh.
So when anything strange used to come along, like I did a reproduction of like a 6 foot tall reproduction of the genie, like the award, uh-huh. The genie award, stuff like that, you know. So anyways, meeting Michaela, her friend worked at McWood also, and that's how we met. Yeah, she was pretty shy when we first met. And one day I saw her, she was walking up the street, and I was on my bicycle. And I stopped and said, "Hey, Michaela." And then after that, we started hanging out and stuff.
Cool.
I think she kissed me once. Can't remember.
Here's a off-tangent question, but as far as like being a woodworker goes, and someone who is... you have a deep awareness of what the wood is trying to say. Like, mm-hmm. If the wood is, you know, the wood is wants to be something and you're trying to go into its depths and pull that out, what about carpenters, you know, the industrial types that are just using power tools and just sawing in and they don't care about grain or any of the, you know, the language of the wood. They're just trying to, you know, like, do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Machinery, well, you know, forcing something into a kind of box.
Yeah, that works too, you know, like there's...
Does that pain you though when you have to do that kind of work where...
Okay, part of the reason why I stopped working at that place was I was very sick and tired of being a tree killer, right? Because when you're working in that situation, there's so much waste, you know, especially if you're doing like film and TV, where you spend 3 months working on something with, you know, 10 other, 12 other, 30 other guys, and then in a day and a half, you set it up, they use it for half an hour, or for the duration of the show, you pull it out and you smash it, right?
Yeah.
That sucks. But, you know, you can respect wood and still, you know, not pay too much attention to the grain, you know, even when you're working in that big environment, like that piece that I was talking about earlier, that my new piece that I'm going to make into a bowl with the design around the edge. Remember I told you about the cracking and the painting? Well, even if you paint there's still going to be a section that is wasted because there's some cracking in it. So you have to throw that extra piece away. You know what I mean? That end piece. And that's what I use. But even in that industrial application, you still have to look at the wood and find out what it's doing. Because you can run a piece, a perfectly straight piece of wood through a table saw, and because of the tension and stuff inside the wood, it'll start twisting, right? It doesn't always happen, but that's perfectly normal, right?
Mm-hmm. What is tung oil?
Tung oil, it's the oil from a nut. Comes from the East, like China and stuff. And it's, you rub it on, and it dries hard. You can do the same thing with walnut oil. I like tung oil because it dries quick. You can use walnut oil, you know, almond oil, like that bowl that I gave you, Doug.
Uh-huh.
If you ever want to, like, make it nice, get yourself a little bit of walnut oil and rub it on, and it'll add an extra coat, just like you're painting it on, except you can lick it when it's still wet if you wanted to, because it's almond oil or walnut oil.
And then, so the bowl, this holy grail that you gave me, is it from a burl?
It's kind of, yeah. It's from a piece of wood that it was an offcut, and it was like the nastiest. It was really nasty. Like, it was lots of hard spots in it, and but it's sort of like where the branch connected to the tree.
Yes.
Where on the inside of the crotch, that's probably where it came from, right? So the branch is weighing down on the tree, so it's creating some tension. So the grain tends to flow to help reduce that tension. Wood's cool, man.
It's what's so fascinating is it looks like you've taken a flat something and then shaped it into the shape.
Yeah, that's yeah.
But
the piece that I had was actually curved. It was kind of like very warped, so it helped with the shape of that ball.
But then on your website, you have a log with a plank of wood sitting on it, you know, a nice square thing, and then you actually hollow out the cavity that you want. So it just seems like such a strange process.
Yeah, nobody does that anymore.
Could you do a dugout canoe?
I wish. I wish. That would be so awesome, man. Dugout canoe is really cool because first, like, you dig it out, right?
Uh-huh.
And then there's the old school ones where they're kind of shallow. But here in North America, some of the dugouts, they would dig it out, and then they would put water and hot rocks into the canoe. And then that would allow you to bend the wood, right? You're steaming it. So then you can make your canoe even wider. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, which is really cool. I've done that with spoons before. Make a big spoon, steam it, and then make it wider and flatter.
Ah.
It's a pretty neat process.
One of the pieces I'm looking at is this Happy New Year Buddha under the Bodhi tree.
Yeah, yeah.
What kind of time investment does something like that take?
I think the tree was 120 hours. And then the wood, I guess, another 20 or so. Because the tree, it's carved up in underneath and stuff, too. All the leaves are visible underneath.
Are the leaves individual pieces that you glue on, or is that
all? No, it's all one piece. There are some leaves that I added on because I like it, that are different materials.
Uh-huh.
And they're all like things like one of them is a dime. One of them is a piece of marble tile that I found on the floor one day, a hunk of brass, a piece of tiger nut, that kind of thing.
What is your normal work day look like?
It's a mess. There's lots of wood chips around.
Do you punch a clock? Is it you start at a certain time every day?
I make coffee and then I do it.
And you do it until you're bored, or you do it?
Yeah, sometimes. No, I'm always doing it. I don't get bored. Sometimes I'll set it. Well, some days I don't. You know, everybody has those days. But if I'm carving, I'm carving. I always have something in my hand.
And do you work on one piece until it's done, or do you have several pieces going all at the same time?
They're all over the place, my friend. In different stages of readiness.
And so we're nearing the end. What kind of connection to existence and reality does what you have, what you do? Is
Wait, we haven't even talked about the marches yet.
The who's?
I thought we were talking
about
the marches.
Question, Doug. One sec. Say it again, Doug.
That was a joke, Will. What kind of lesson, what connection to life and reality and existence do you get out of working with wood?
My motto, I guess, would be, you know, I want to make things that people can use, things people need. And one of my, I was talking about my brother Joe doing that carving. The other thing was my mom always had this wooden spoon that my grandfather made. And it was a nice wooden spoon. And every time I used it, I would remember my grandfather. And it wasn't just a wooden spoon. It had meaning behind it. And it was something that you'd use every day. So you get that little piece of something every day. And that's what I try to do. Make things that are nicer. Like I make light switch plates because everybody has these stupid, crappy plastic ones. When you can have something that instead of stupid and crappy is nice.
There's time and thought put into it.
Yeah. And if not that, at least like there's, you know, a little bit more beautification in your life.
That was 42 minutes. Thank you for sharing it with us. You've been listening to John Sousa on SyncBook Radio, a production of thesyncbook.com. More information about the work of Mr. Sousa can be found at canadiandipsticks.blogspot.ca. More information about the SyncBook, our guest, check out past shows, or to subscribe to the podcast via iTunes, please be sure and visit our website at 42minutes.com.
If you like the podcast, please support it by becoming a donor. You'll find the donation links under each episode on the website and consider setting up a monthly charge. Thanks so much and see you in Olivia!
Speak the rhythm on you. Sync Book Press and Radio 8 Ball invite you to the 2014 Olympia Sync Summit, the weekend of August 8th in Olympia, Washington. Hosted by Alan Abadesa-Green of Sync Book Press and Andras Jones of Radio 8 Ball. Featuring a guided tour of the Kabbalistic Tree of Olympia. Speakers include Rodney Asher, Joe Alexander, Marty Leeds, Will Morgan, Scott Onstott, James Evan Pilato, Ezra Sanzerbell, Michael Schott, Andy Schmushkin, and many more. Please support this event by visiting thesyncbook.com/OLY2014. That's thesyncbook.com/OLY2014. For links to the campaign, where you can purchase your pass to the event or one of the available Sync perks. This promises to be the most ambitious and intimate Sync Book event yet. Will you be coming to Olympia?